Kirky. From the KNKT broadcast studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. We are presented by Bosky Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Carlos Griego, what a great guy. He was on the show earlier this week talking about some ministry things and the family that he has at Bosky Heating and Cooling. What a great company. If you need plumbing services, definitely give them a call. They'll take care of you. I've used them on my own home, used them for my parents who are elderly. They've been kind, nice, and professional. So that's a shout-out to Bosky Heating and Cooling. We are joined in studio today by Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, and our good friend Dr. Linda Walkup. She is a molecular geneticist. Hi, Linda. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. It's good to be here again.
Well, thank you. Ray, I've got to start our program today in the midst of all this political upheaval, social unrest, talking about COVID. We just get to talk about something that I think is really fun. But I've got to use these three words, use your brain. That's why we're talking about this.
Right.
Ray, tell me why we are talking about old versus a young universe.
Well, I think all of these topics that we've been dealing with in the last over a year now deal with whether or not the Bible actually fits reality. Is the Bible true? Is the Bible inspired? Is the Bible inerrant? And one of the areas that is challenged in is this whole area of science. And we've gone over three major areas. One of them almost isn't an issue anymore because even secular scientists are recognizing the weakness of evolutionary thinking and evolutionary theory. We looked at Genesis flood, and now we're on the topic of the age of the universe.
Well, and you mentioned the Genesis flood. So I want to remind everybody that you can find archives on our podcast site, which is abqconnect.online. You can go in and check out all of the podcasts. You can just put in the search thing, Ray Mondragon, and it's going to bring up, or you can put in creation science, and you can find things from Dr. Humphreys, Dr. Walkup, and yourself, Ray. There's a ton of information
right
that's available. I want to also remind everybody that you can go to Ray's website, forhisglorynm.com, and you can also go to csfnm.com or .org. Which is Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And all of this information that we're talking about is very well documented, very well documented. Linda, I understand you spoke at Creation Science Fellowship here last month.
Yes, yes, I gave a talk on dinosaur soft tissue and how the finds kind of demonstrate that the Earth is young because the tissue and protein and even DNA really would not be expected to survive for millions of years as a fossil.
And again, I want to remind our listeners, we had you on, Linda, here prior to COVID, I believe. And you,
no, it was.
Was it during COVID?
Yeah,
I know it
yeah.
was three was months ago, COVID. But I've kind of lost track. This COVID thing has just blown my mind. But what we talked about is the fact that, and we have to say it, it's very similar to Jurassic Park and those fun movies we watched over the years where they've actually found soft tissue and DNA inside these fossil bones. And that's a fairly recent discovery. And that's just, again, an indication that these bones are not millions of years old.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But, Ray, so do non-Christian scientists disagree with the evidence that we will be discussing today?
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason we want to do this is because particularly on the university campus, our students don't hear anything about what we're talking about on these sessions that we have every 3 or 4 weeks. So I think young people need to know that there's an alternative explanation that actually supports the Bible. And the Bible, in fact, is in fact inerrant and true. Because on the university campus, all you're going to hear is evolutionary theory an earth that's billions of years old, the non-existence of a Genesis flood, and that the Bible is just mythological and not worth believing in. So, yes, this is why we do this.
So, Linda, I'm going to ask you a general question. When you look at in the science that you specialize in, molecular genetics, I know you also teach chemistry and high school biology to homeschooled young people. When you look at a cell or you look at DNA or any of those kinds of things, you actually see the creator in that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, but an evolutionist will look at that same data and they come to it at a whole different perspective. They say there can't be a God. So they don't even allow that to be a perspective. And then so that's why they evaluate the data differently.
Yes, it's like they don't have that option. So a lot of times, an honest scientist will admit, especially things like the origin of life and how the complexity of a cell and even just the complexity of DNA can have evolved from just simple organic molecules without any design or plan. They admit that they don't have a way to explain it. I mean, they said, we just need to do more research. But it's because they don't have any option. So obviously they say it happened because we're here.
Right.
But they don't, and we just need to work on how that actually happened.
So we're really
not proven.
Yeah. Linda, when we talk about the difference between creation science, where there's an acknowledgement of a creator and you're just almost, your breath is taken away when you see the amazing creation that we have. But the premises of a person of faith is that this was all created by a creator, by design. It's amazing. A lot of people that are involved in evolution, and I know there's people that believe in, call it a hybrid evolutionary theology or theistic evolution or whatever term you want to use. I know there's people striving to have both things, but in the final analysis, none of this happened by accident. This was all by design. Mm-hmm. But that might be a salvation issue when you don't acknowledge a creator and you don't acknowledge Jesus as his son, etc. But today we're not really talking about that. Today we're talking about old earth, new earth, or young earth. And that's not really a salvation issue because, Ray, there are Christians that don't believe in young earth.
In fact, the majority of Christians would probably not hold the viewpoint that Linda and Russ Humphreys and I would hold to, which we believe. And again, it goes to the credibility of the Bible. The Bible seems to give the impression that the earth is relatively young. You can't find these billion-year eras in the Bible. So the issue is the Bible credible? And if you look at science, science actually backs us up. There's some scientific evidence that a lot of people are not aware of, and they buy into what you hear in the media of billions of years of evolutionary processes.
Right. So you might, if you're listening today, you might think, Jim, why are you having Linda and Ray on the program? What's the point? Well, my point is really this. I am very interested in this because it gets me to think about what I read in the Bible. I want everybody to use their brain and come away from these kind of discussions with three or four takeaways that will actually help you if you're talking with someone in the area of what we call apologetics, where you can reason with somebody and you can say, look, you may not believe this, but take a look at this scientific evidence. And that might give you a different perspective on what you read in the Bible. God doesn't need us to defend him.
Absolutely. He does not.
I was having an interesting conversation with Dr. Stephen Collins and Dr. Gary Byers, who are world-renowned archaeologists here a week or so ago. And Steve always says something very, he's always very adamant. He says, hey, look, I'm not waiting on archaeology to prove to me that there's a God of this universe and that Jesus was his son and died for our sins. I already know that. And I'm already enjoying eternal life with him. That was a surprising statement because he's not depending on the science. What he's doing is just observing God's creation and everything that was left for us to uncover. And he's right. just encouraged every day. This was the amazing thing. You would think that if this is not true, that there would be science, maybe even every day, that would be disproving the Bible.
Right.
That's not happening.
The very opposite is happening. In fact, the more we learn in science, the more we are finding that evolution cannot be a, not even, I don't even think it rises to the level of a theory. Mm. And there has to be, if you want to talk just secular, there has to be an intelligent designer at least.
Yeah.
And that intelligent designer has to have the characteristics of the God that is described in the Bible.
Yeah. Linda, when you're teaching young people, high school students, are you able to make some correlation for them between biology as a science and what the Bible says?
Yes, certainly. And then when we talk about genetics, which of course is my favorite topic, and we see how information is stored in DNA from inorganic molecules, and how that came to be, that how do you get information translating from DNA to a completely different molecule protein, and that you need the protein to make the DNA and you need the DNA to code for the protein. It's like they see the point that there's no way that it can happen by chance.
And Linda, if one organism has a certain DNA to it, that doesn't transition into another species, does it?
No, the examples that are given, and the more that you look at biology books, and this is something when I was in school, and I was not, I was a Christian, but I was not a young earth creationist when I was in undergrad and in grad school, but I was looking for answers to understand the Bible better, to see how it fit in with the Bible. And so I took several evolution classes, actually, as an undergraduate. And so I was always asked for examples of, well, have we seen a new species arise? And the examples I was given were sort of trivial, you know, just a plant doubling the number of its chromosomes and officially becoming a different species, but not anything that could be documented as really evolution. And antibiotic resistance in bacteria is always cited as a example of evolution. But when you look at the details of it, which I did a lot in my study. I worked on bacterial genetics in graduate school. When you get into the details, you see it is not usually a gain of function you see in antibiotic resistance. You just see, you see loss of function of certain genes, which makes them resistant, or you just see bacteria passing around existing genes across different species even, and gaining antibiotic resistance, but the original genes have been found in the population even back before we started using antibiotics as people. And so that doesn't prove any gain of information being seen.
We discussed actually several months ago the mechanism of mutations, and I gave like 8 results of 160 years of research, primarily by evolutionists. And one of the points that we made is that very point that you make. There's never been an observed gain of information as a result of mutations. It's always a loss of information, which is the opposite of what evolution requires.
And there's several of those that I remember, like mutations don't happen in order. You know, we joked around that an amoeba doesn't become an NFL player in 2 million years or 12,000 years. You choose the right number.
You might explain, you were discussing what I described in the same area of genetic burden. You might explain it from your perspective.
Okay, so one thing that is really being seen now that we have the ability to sequence whole genomes rapidly, which has only been really the last 10 years we've been able to do that. So I did want to mention this famous experiment that's been going on for over 30 years that is also, I know in my daughter's college biology textbook, they cited this, there's websites. So it's called the most famous evolution experiment of all time. But what it actually shows is evolution is going the wrong way. It's called the Long-Term Evolution Experiment. It was started in 1988 by Dr. Richard Lenski, where they took an original strain of E. coli bacteria, which they knew the characteristics of. At that time, they didn't have whole genome sequencing, and they began starting 12 identical, you know, starting with that one. They started these bacterial cultures, which you just grow in a flask and you shake. They let them grow until they filled the flask, usually at the end of each day, and then the next day they would start a new one. And they would take samples every day and freeze them to analyze later, and they looked to see the genetic mutations that might arise as they just monitored this growing irregular solution. And they would compare, they would take the samples and they compare against the strain. So what they called increased fitness was just how fast they grew, which obviously has a limit. They can only divide DNA so fast. They can only divide so fast. So it was going to hit a wall at some point anyway. So that maybe not the best estimate of fitness, but that's what they were doing. And so they would just compare against the original strain, whether they had improved in some way. Then they would try to use genetic techniques to figure out, well, what exactly happened? What kind of mutation do we see? And especially in the last 20 years or so, they can now sequence the whole genomes quickly. They can really determine what's happening. And so they saw a lot of mutations accumulating, but they didn't see what you would call beneficial mutations happening, except very rarely. So now there's been about 70,000 bacterial generations. 10 to the 14th bacteria have lived and died, and they've tested them. And they came up with less than 100 sort of beneficial mutations that they would analyze. And all of those except for sort of one involved a loss of information. Something that happened, so they lost something that they did. Like one thing they lost was bacteria have flagella. They used to just move around. But because they were in this situation in the culture, they didn't really need to swim. It wasn't important for their survival. And if they just jettisoned making flagella, then they could save a little energy. They could grow a little faster. And so that, by that definition, they were more fit. Of course, if they're thrown back into a wild type population, they would be competed out. They would be less fit. But it did make them grow a little faster. So the first few years are just those sort of little mutations that happened. And then there was not much increase in growth rate. But the one change that they touted as evolution happening is that they saw one of the lines gained an ability to grow on a different type of growth media. So a compound that was in the growth media, but normally they don't use it to help themselves grow. So it was citrate. And they gained this ability to utilize citrate. So was this a new gene that had appeared? So actually not. The gene already existed, but under normal conditions, when they have oxygen, they can't use it. They can't transport it in. And so there had been two changes. That gene had gotten duplicated, and then part of it had moved over in front of a different promoter, the thing that turns genes on, so it was turned on all the time, which is not correct, not the usual regulatory situation. But in this particular very narrow environment, it caused it to grow faster. So it really was no innovation. It was just a random mutation that in this very artificial environment enabled them to grow faster. So this wasn't really an evolution. It was a very narrow gain of function that only increases fitness in this very specific environment.
Yeah.
So not really anything beneficial, not anything turning into anything else.
That is, I love talking about this, because what it tells me is that here's a group of evolutionists trying to prove their theory, and they ended up supporting what the Bible says. And when we come back, we've been talking a little bit more about evolution versus creation science, and we're going to start focusing a little bit more on old versus young earth in our next segment and the rest of the day. So stay with us. We're with Ray Mondragon and Dr. Linda Walkup. We'll be right back after these messages.
I'm Michelle Garcia Holmes, and I approve this message.
Babies in New Mexico are aborted up to their date of birth. Some of these babies are born alive during the process. Our community needs to stand strong against this horrible act. This is not health care for women. This year, I'm voting for pro-life candidates like Michelle Garcia Holmes, who's running for Congress. Michelle Garcia Holmes will stand strong for life, and she will stand up for all New Mexicans' rights.
Paid for by Michelle Garcia Holmes for Congress.
Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Elma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of old school gimmicks and games while shopping for a new car, then experience something new school at Power Ford. You'll get none of the hocus pocus, hokey pokey stuff the other guys try to pull. So here's the deal. We'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico, or we'll put $1,000 cash in your pocket. Come see why others rated us Best of the City and Ford Dealer of the Year. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaña, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Molecular geneticist Dr. Linda Walkup on the phone with us this afternoon. We appreciate Linda being with us. And Ray Mondragon, he is a Bible and creation science teacher with Chafer Seminary and Bible Study Fellowship. Linda was telling us in our first segment that she taught here last month with Bible Study Fellowship. Ray, would you tell us a little bit about Bible Study Fellowship? You meet the third Tuesday of every month. That's open to everybody. It's free, and you have some really interesting materials.
Yeah, creation science fellowship,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. What did I say?
Bible.
Oh,
study.
Yeah. I'm driving myself crazy. So Creation Science Fellowship. Yes.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's an organization that it was actually started from people like Los Alamos. We talked with Russ Humphreys. He was one of the original founders, and from Sandia National Labs. So a lot of scientists that were believers or are believers and believing in a high view of not only Scripture, but obviously what Scripture teaches concerning God. They organized a fellowship to spread the word concerning creation science, that science actually supports what the Bible teaches. So it's been meeting for, I don't know, 35 years now. Do you remember when it was founded, Linda, Creation Science Fellowship? Wasn't it mid-80s, somewhere in there?
Yeah, 1991.
91? Okay.
Yeah.
So almost 30 years. With the view to inform basically the public. So families are encouraged. In fact, people like Linda and homeschoolers, we encourage them to come in order to get this information out. So it's not just scientists gathering together and enjoying one another. We do, you know, they do that, but we want to get the word out. So that's what Creation Science Fellowship is
all
about.
I want to point out that these materials and these resources, really on the website, Creation Science Fellowship, CSFNM.org.
Correct.
Has a lot of free information that, say you're a biology teacher at a high school locally in Roswell or Albuquerque or whatever, and you want to check some of this stuff out. Go in and grab some of the articles. Go in and grab some of that stuff. And then there's a lot more websites.
Exactly.
And you have a website, Ray, that's For His Glory.
NM.com.
And you have Bible studies and you have creation science articles and different things that you've read and that you've written.
Right.
That are all to do with this topic. You have a very amazing, bibliography. that's available to people.
Yes.
So I want to make sure that everybody knows that everything we're talking about really is documented. And I try to give links on the ABQ Connect.online post that we do so that you have lots of that information. Talk to us, Ray, about old versus young interview universe, and talk to us about our last interview with Russ Humphreys.
Well, last time we had actually a world-class scientist. We were privileged to have him be part of our interview here. And he made it very clear that he was basically an evolutionist, became a believer, and began to look at the science, and the science just really didn't make sense in terms of evolutionary thinking, ended up young Earth. And he's done a lot of research in this area of the age of the Earth. So what he did last time is he gave us kind of a rundown very quickly. In fact, boom, 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 evidence for young Earth from different areas. I think he touched on astrophysics. He dealt with oceanography. He dealt with chemistry. Just all these different clocks, you might say, or ways of measuring age. And there's no absolute date, but all of them give limiting parameters. In other words, the Earth cannot be any more than a certain amount depending on the
right. He referred us to an article that he participated in writing called 101 Evidences for a Young Earth.
Exactly.
When you go to that article, the very first paragraph says, there's no way that anybody can prove how old the Earth is. But these types of calculations, and I'll give you one. This is the kind of stuff that I can hold on to because every day I'm interviewing people that are a lot smarter than me. You and Linda, a prime example. But one of the things he said is, if you just calculate the amount of runoff, the silt or the mud going into the ocean from rivers and lakes and things on land into the ocean.
And he's made these calculations.
Well, and you can observe it now.
Right,
you can say, okay, well, this is how much is going into the ocean now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's choose the number of years. 2 billion, 10,000, whatever you want to say. It shouldn't technically be different. Could because gravity's kind of the same and, you know, whatever the factors are. But if our Earth is, what, 4 billion years old?
Four and a half is the evolutionary.
We should have a certain amount of mud at the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't.
No.
And he indicated that it was an indicator, of the amount of silt on the bottom of the ocean indicates that we're maybe 12,000 or less years old.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact numbers, but these are the numbers that he gave. Those are maximums.
Ray, that's the kind of stuff that a brain like mine, which I know is limited, I can hold on to those kind of things.
Right.
And I can ask a college professor about that kind of data.
Right.
And a
student can do that.
Yeah,
young person can say, well, what about this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Linda, are you breeding other, molecular geneticists in your family? Is that what you're doing?
She's got a few.
Well, my last daughter might go that direction, but others have gone to a computer, so.
Okay. Well, you need computers to calculate all of this kind of stuff because, you know, you mentioned a DNA strand. When you probably first found out about DNA, they couldn't even look at the complexity of it, could they? Because it was so complicated.
Right. That is really the perspective of DNA has changed a lot since when I was in school as far as to the level of complexity and even not just the information stored linearly, but in three dimensions, how different parts of DNA from different chromosomes even interact with each other in the nucleus. It's very orderly. It's very complex. And we've just discovered so much in the last 30 years.
Isn't it considered the most complex in a small place of information anywhere in the universe, anywhere known in the universe? In other words, the accumulation of more information on a small scale than you can find anywhere?
Oh, yes. So
by magnitudes?
So actually, storage data places, see what the Google is. Microsoft in May 2017 says it has a plan to add DNA storage to its cloud data center because you can store more information in DNA per gram or per volume than you can any other substance. So DNA is the best.
No other storage system is comparable.
Right, right.
Yeah. Linda, you're going to need those computer scientists in your on your team, on the walk-up team. You need them in addition to the geneticists that you have. This is all really fascinating information. We're going to take another break, say thank you to our sponsors. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Linda about some of the specifics and the scientific evidence that she's come across in the last years for a young universe. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Dr. Linda Walkup is a creation scientist. She's on the phone with us this afternoon. And Ray Mondragon, a creation science teacher. And he teaches in seminary, teaches all his own stuff. He has a whole library of information available on his website, and that's forhisglorynm.com. Very frequent visitor to our program. Dr. Linda, you're getting more frequent with us. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, we want to get into now, I brought up, you know, for lack of a better thing, you know, people like me, we like movies. We watch Jurassic Park years ago. We see a scientist drill to a piece of amber with an insect, a mosquito, that they explained in the movie, took a bite out of a dinosaur. DNA was inside the mosquito, and they drill in and they took the DNA out, and then they filled in the gaps with some kind of reptile like a frog, and they created dinosaurs from that. What's fascinating is you shared with us last time you were on the program that inside of fossilized bones, they've actually discovered soft tissue that contains DNA. Tell us about that.
Yes. And so starting about 2005, and a lot of this has been the work of Dr. Mary Schweitzer, who's at North Carolina State University. And it was sort of a serendipitous discovery that they were just dissolving away the minerals around a fossilized T-Rex bone, and their lab technician let it go too far, and it dissolved it all away, and they were left with this sort of gelatinous mass, which when they looked at it, looked a lot like bone tissue and collagen, and it was stretchy. It didn't just disappear completely. There was something organic and still having structure inside of it.
Or brittle. It wasn't brittle.
Huh?
It wasn't brittle.
It wasn't brittle. It was stretchy. And you can Google those videos online. It's very striking. They just take tweezers and they kind of pull on it and go, wow, it is stretchy tissue. And then over the last 15 years, it was a very controversial find initially. And she's actually a student of Jack Horner, who was sort of the model for the star of Jurassic Park, a very well-respected dinosaur paleontologist who is an evolutionist. And he's the one that said, here, you can have this and you can do your experiments on it. And so after a lot of work and very careful experiments, she proved well enough that it was published in Science magazine, one of the premier magazines, saying, look, we found soft tissue. We found evidence of the proteins you expect in a dinosaur leg bone, collagen, and other things that where she eventually proved were related to the proteins you see on reptiles or birds today. It was not bacterially derived. It was definitely from a reptile-like animal.
And these are bones that the evolutionist would date at 65 million or before years old.
Right.
So that's kind of the key in this.
That's the key, is that no one ever really looked, because no one anticipated you could possibly find anything organic left in the middle of a dinosaur bone. And since then, there have been other scientists and researchers that have also discovered tissue that looked fresh, proteins that could be extracted, and most recently, last spring, published a paper from a baby duck-billed dinosaur skull, and they showed that you could actually see cells dividing with their DNA chromosomes inside, and she demonstrated using emu bone that it looks exactly like you find in a skull of an emu as far as what the cells look like when they're dividing, and did some other experiments showing that you can actually get small little pieces of DNA sequences from these bones that are dated to 65 to 80 million years ago.
And Linda, it is really unlikely, based on what we know about DNA and soft tissue, that this tissue could still be present if these bones were that old.
Yes, definitely. So they've done several experiments since then, just seeing what is their half-life, how long can DNA or protein survive, you know, left out in a desert or, you know, just outside. And one calculation they did with looking at old bones in Australia, and that they knew how old they were. And so they calculated it's about 521 years for DNA, that half of it gets destroyed. And so after about 6.8 million years, there'd be absolutely nothing left to look at. So it makes no sense that you can actually, she did manage to sequence short, like 10 base pairs of DNA still intact, and prove to most people that it actually was still existing. And there's no good explanation of how that could be.
So, Linda, let's say you're a 19-year-old, first year of college. You're taking a biology class. This kind of topic, or let's say the topic of evolution comes up, and you bring up this discovery. What is a secular scientist going to say to you in response to a statement?
Well, there are some that just don't believe. They also say, well, we just need to do more research on how such tissue and bone and DNA could actually survive. There must be some mechanism of how it can survive that long. And Dr. Mary Schweitzer herself has done some studies on how the iron and hemoglobin that would be found inside the bones does help preserve, and she did a short experiment over 2 years showing, yes, it does help, but to extrapolate this to millions of years or even thousands of years is a bit difficult. It just doesn't show anything. And so scientists, it's the same as the origin of life. They wave their hands and say, well, there must be some way that it can be preserved that long because we see it. But we just haven't figured out what it is yet.
Yeah, we just need more time and more research and more dollars to do the research to be able to figure this out. Right?
Yeah. Just have faith. We're going to find the way.
Linda, I know that you didn't say this on our program, but I think Ray said it and other scientists that I've had on the program, they've all made the general statement that it takes an awful lot more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in God as a creator and Jesus as his son. Would you say that's true?
Well, certainly I think that's true. The more that we see that what we see in genomes and genetic information, we see things that are amazingly created and complex, but we also see genetic entropy. We see that mutations are causing a gradual breakdown in all the living things we see today. And I was just referring to, so John Sanford, who is a former professor at Cornell, he was evolutionist for many years, but then he became, as he looked closer, as he studied molecular genetics, and he's actually one of the inventor of the gene gun, which is one of the first ways we got new genes into cells. He when he really began to look at evolution, he saw that, as he said, the emperor has no clothes. That when you look at the details, it doesn't make sense, and that we don't see genetic information increasing; we just see it decaying and getting worse through time, as if it were created originally perfectly, but now we just see degeneration. As we can sequence and watch from generation to generation, even in people, the number of mutations that are accumulating.
Linda, does looking at the science, did this have a profound effect upon you and your faith as you were growing?
Yes, certainly there was points of time, especially as an undergraduate in biology, because I went to a secular university and that was all that was taught, and it was difficult to look at things sometimes from a different perspective and see it as having been created first, and that evolution couldn't account for this. But as I examine even the same data from a different perspective, you can see that it makes no sense how complexity came from non-complexity. And actually, as we more we learned about the genome, especially during my lifetime, we see that the things that we thought we would expect to see, we have not seen. We have not seen instances of being able to even see a bacteria significantly evolve now that we can look at the details of how that could happen. We don't see that. And we see that we just see mutation accumulation through time. We see that we don't see good beneficial mutations. We just see most mutations are bad. And the ones that happen to be good in a certain situation in general are from a loss of function. So I certainly in my lifetime, I just see the more and more I see in genetics, the more I believe a creation and then a fall and a degeneration from that. That is what we see reflected in life and in genetics.
I'm trying to think of I don't know if you want to call it a rhetorical strategy or something. I have politicians and people that are part of economic think tanks and different things addressing all that we are going through in this election that we're in the middle of right now. And one of the big topics is education in the state of New Mexico. Kids Count 2020 says that New Mexico is number 50 in education, and that is measuring things mm-hmm. like fourth grade reading levels, eighth grade proficiencies in math, and high school graduation rates. New Mexico is number 50 out of 50 states. Wow. And Linda, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand as an athlete, if my coach coached us to the last place in the conference, they would have been fired. I guess that's just real life. So I'm fascinated with, could Dr. Linda Walkup stand before the board at, and I'm not saying you should do this, I'm just kind of imagining a hypothetical situation, but if you stood before the Albuquerque Public School Board and said, look, you are teaching evolution as science in the Albuquerque Public Schools, and I don't think you should be doing that. And here's why. Because this is what the science is actually showing. I know that they wouldn't, I'm a realist, I don't think they would all of a sudden say, oh, well, we automatically believe in God as the creator and Jesus as our savior. I'm not expecting that. What I am expecting is, why wouldn't they just stop teaching that and make general statements about, we just don't have the answers, here's all the things you should be looking at, here's what an honest scientist would be discovering. Like you've just said today, why couldn't they do that?
I think it has been done.
Yeah.
So I have been involved in the past whenever they're revising the science standards for the state. They asked for people for feedback, and one time way back I was on a committee to evaluate materials and biology textbooks and give feedback about that, and which I did. And I did make statements as saying, and I said some of these arguments for evolution that are in here, regardless of that the basic premise is that you can get random mutations and natural selection to create complexity, but they use old arguments partly because they don't have good new arguments to go against them.
Yeah.
And I cited some like that embryos go through recapitulate what their evolutionary past was. That is been something that's been debunked a while ago, but it was still in
yeah.
textbooks, and it was one of the standards. And they essentially didn't want to listen to that. And there was a recent kerfuffle, of course, when that teeny, teeny, tiny bit of openness, I think 2015, And I'm not sure why that current Secretary of Education wanted to put in things like discussing age of the earth as if it were possible that it could be something different. There was just teeny tiny little openings, and there was a huge outcry from teachers and scientists and whoever that went up to Santa Fe. And I actually went up to Santa Fe to speak on that because I thought these are very reasonable things. Let the students think about the issues. And there was a huge, I had no idea. I just went up myself and there were hundreds of people there waiting to speak. And I go, oh, I didn't get here early enough to sign. It says, oh, would you like to get in? It says, we want everyone to speak. I said, does it matter what side I'm speaking on? I said, you're not against science, are you? I said, no, I'm not, but I don't think from what the person on the megaphone was saying, I'm on the side of the people here. I was going on the side is that I think a lot of these changes would be good that would allow students to think more clearly about some of these issues. And so, but I was like the only one there. There was other people that submitted letters, but they were all the changes that had been proposed were all, he backed off of all of them. And so there was no conversation about alternatives to evolution because all the scientific world would collapse if that happened.
We've actually said on several of our other interviews that it's not an intellectual issue that we're facing. It's really a spiritual issue, and the hearts of men are desperately wicked, and there's not a desire to look at an alternative in spite of the science. So you have all the arguments, but really, you're fighting against a spiritual heart that is resistant, that can't face a creator.
You know, I have to tell you, I mean, I'm a retired banker. I've looked at financial statements my entire life, figured out if people were qualified to borrow money, looked at their businesses, looked at their real estate, collateralized loans, everything you can think of when it comes to that. And so I may be wrong in that I'm applying some of my thought processes there into this. And I can't help but think that if New Mexico made a statement, I'm not expecting them again to say, yeah, we have a Christian curriculum, creation science curriculum. But if they would come out and say, look, our public schools have basically decided that evolution is just a ridiculous non-scientific theory, and we will no longer teach it in our public schools. I'm just telling you, with that alone, hundreds of thousands of people would move to New Mexico and get their kids involved in our education, our schools in this state, because no one has the courage to make that statement. And I'm going to be fascinated with here in the coming months and years, whether or not as science continues to support creation science, whether somebody will finally make that decision who's in leadership, and maybe that's going to be part of this election. I don't know. We're going to be back with Dr. Linda Walkup and Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, right after these messages. Stay with us.
The Great Mission features ministries making disciples for Christ. Many of these ministries are halfway around the world. Amigo Fiel is just down the road, south on I-25 in Juarez, Mexico. For more than 25 years, Carlos and Sylvia Garcia have provided a safe place for children to find food and assistance with homework after school. Amid COVID-19, Amigo Fiel continues. Here's Carlos.
Greeting from Amigo Fiel in Ciudad Juarez. We welcome the children. We're taking the necessary precautions to keep everything clean so that we prevent disease from being spread. We are experiencing a shortage of food, as his word says in Philippians 4:6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God.
Support Amigo Fiel. Click the Great Mission banner at star88.fm or knkt.com.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
Based on what you're currently learning and experiencing, what do you not do that you probably should? What you promised in the past, we're never going to do this. And you recognize, you know what? Now I probably should actually be doing this. Second question, based on what you're currently learning and experiencing, what have you done for years, but you should probably stop, undo, or change? It might be good to involve other people to help give you objectivity, because sometimes you're too close to it to see. You might want to think about these four categories. Maybe there's something you can delegate, something you should stop, something you should start, and maybe there's someone you could empower. If you're not changing how you think, how you lead, what you do, and what you don't do, your past assumptions will limit your future potential.
That was Craig Rochelle on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We're talking about evolution versus creation science, and more specifically an old Earth versus a young universe, young Earth, and there's all kinds of scientific evidence. I want to appeal to our listeners. We're not asking you to believe Ray. We're not asking you to believe Linda. There's a ton of science.
Absolutely.
These two people have spent their lives now investigating this and looking at it. And by the way, with big smiles on your faces, you guys kind of like doing this, don't you, Ray?
Oh, we love it.
Yeah.
We
Linda, you enjoy this thoroughly, don't you?
Well, it's fun to be able to tell the truth in the face of a lot of darkness and a lot of confusion, and particularly in the area of science.
So Ray, you've got a lot of resources at your disposal. You have one on the table in front of you. Tell us about that.
Well, along the lines of what Linda's talking about, there's been not only Mary Schweitzer's research and others, but there's others that have come along and done some research. And I've got this Creation Research Society quarterly that's devoted to what they describe as the iDino project, that basically is investigating the same thing that Linda is describing for us. And iDino is kind of an acronym for Investigation of Dinosaur Intact Natural Osteotissue. Kind of a long name there, but the results of the research is in this quarterly, but the point I'm making is that this isn't isolated research, that this is expanding because people are becoming more and more aware of it, even though the scientific community is rejecting it in general and kind of dancing around it and doesn't want to mention it, doesn't want the information out. But people are doing research. Can you add anything to that, Linda? You're more familiar with this iDino project than I am, I'm sure.
Yes. So they did dig up their own Triceratops horn from a similar formation in Montana. And they also isolated stretchy tissue cells that look like the bone, bone-forming cells, the same thing. So, it's been a number of different finds from around the world where people have been able to do this. And because they just never looked before this first instance where it happened, and now lots of scientists are doing this. And so also at the Institute for Creation Research, that ICR website, they also have they've collected an Excel file of every instance of ancient tissue DNA preserved that's been found millions of years old by all these different publications.
And ICR.org. ICR.org.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda.
So anyway, it's a long list of research, particularly in the last 15 years, of scientists just looking into this and trying to figure out how in the world, of course, most of their perspective is how in the world can this be preserved for millions of years? And so it's not an isolated dinosaur we happen to find that maybe it survived the flood or lived a long time. This is from, strata that's supposed to be dated to millions of years in different places around the world. And so I do want to also recommend John Sanford's book, Genetic Entropy and the Mystery of the Genome, which is available on Amazon. Just a great explanation of the problems with evolution. And he also has a very interesting talk. He spoke to the NIH in 2018, and it's on YouTube, about genetic degeneration, if you just search YouTube for that, and just very sobering about how the human genome and this modeling taken about 100,000 years will be totally non-functional if we follow the same trajectory of mutation that we see happening today.
So that argues for a relatively young Earth, because if you project in the past, the Earth could not be millions or billions of years old, correct?
Yes. So our human lineage, for example, is supposed to have split off from our from chimps and the other apes about 6 million years ago, but it doesn't make any sense, at least at the mutation rates we are seeing today, that it could have survived in its functional form as it is today. It doesn't make sense. It's more like it was working well thousands of years ago, tens of thousands of years ago, maybe, but it is at the rate that it's going. The decay that we see now is not consistent with having survived millions of years of evolution.
Good point. Well, thank you, Linda. We just have a little bit of time left, and what I'd like to do is just mention, did you have anything else before I didn't mean to shut you off?
That's fine.
You completed your thought there. Wanted to mention what you've already got scheduled for 2 weeks, actually, another interview on a Wednesday. And what I'd like to do is continue our discussion. One of the main problems that we need to talk about is radiometric dating. So I'd like to devote a whole session mm-hmm. on radiometric dating. And that's what I would plan on doing in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
There are three, okay. If we have time, there are three major areas that the old Earth people use to support their position. One of them is the geological column. And I think we dispensed with that. If there's a Genesis flood, then that entire geological column was not laid down over millions and millions of years and billions, but as a result of the Genesis flood in a matter of months. Mm. The second area that people have a problem with is radiometric dating. So we need to address that and answer the old earthers and the evolutionists as well.
Mm. Didn't they used to use what they called carbon 14 dating?
They still do.
But now I understand that the half-life of carbon 14 actually indicates that this is a young earth.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that Russ talked about.
Yeah.
Then the third thing is I'm going to have Russ come back and tell us about the third problem is starlight and time.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. Dr. Linda Walkup, Ray Mondragon, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.